For so many of us, having high-speed internet is not only a privilege, we expect it. But for those in the Arctic, the connection has been limited as they rely mainly on satellite connection. For years, companies have been looking to place thousands of miles of undersea cables in the Arctic Ocean, but faced limitations due to the area being covered by sheets of ice. But with climate change melting sea ice now more than ever, it may be all the opening these companies need. For more on this, we're joined by Wall Street Journal reporter Isabel Bousquet, who's visited parts of the Arctic in her coverage for this story. Isabel, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So in your articles, you describe the Arctic as one of the last digital frontiers. What do you mean by that?
What I mean is that a lot of the planet gets their internet access through what we call subsea fiber optic cables. These are essentially really tiny wires that cross the ocean floors. They basically connect continents wherever you see a body of water, and they carry 99% of intercontinental voice and data traffic. That's how, you know, a lot of the world gets their high-speed internet. Those cables have yet to sort of really crisscross through the Arctic Ocean, in part because that sea ice has been such an inhibitor. So because of that, they've been a lot more limited in their connectivity.
Huh. So now that we see the unfortunate impact of climate change melting that ice sheet, it seems like an opening for some companies to go in?
Yeah, absolutely. It is. And, you know, it's obviously really unfortunate that we're losing that piece of nature, but it's also a technology opportunity for people living in those regions, communities, hospitals, schools, scientists doing really important climate change research to be able to upload data, send emails, stream videos in a way that they couldn't before. And the sea ice is still a challenge. It still exists, especially during the winter months. And so the companies that are thinking of constructing more digital infrastructure there still have to take that into account and think about how they're handling that during the construction. But it is definitely much easier than it's ever been before.
Okay, so climate change is melting the ice means that ships can traverse the necessary path in summer for these cables. But cable ships would need to be equipped as icebreakers, which hasn't yet been done. And something that occurred to me was that I thought we were trying to protect these ice sheets from melting or breaking them up, not break them up more. Is that a concern?
Well, it's not totally clear whether these cable-laying ships are ever going to be equipped to break through ice. And it's less of a concern for the construction of the actual cables because they can pretty much plan to just construct it during the summer months, as it is a concern about maintenance once these cables are up and running. If there's any issue with a breakage or outage of the cable, the idea is that a ship would go in and repair it. That's what happens with cables in other parts of the world. But if there's a cable in the Arctic Ocean and it breaks in the winter and there's a sea ice covering that, it's not clear how a ship is going to get to that and repair it. Mm. And so there are conversations about whether to fortify some of these ships. There's not a ship yet that does the dual function of repairing cable and also breaking through ice. Mm.
So I have to wonder, I mean, there are companies that are racing to be the one to lay the cables across the Arctic. And, you know, I can't imagine it's just for the sparse communities that live there. What are the interests of these companies in laying these cables? Who benefits from the Arctic being wired, so to speak?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's actually a huge business proposition to putting in this cable, and that's because the distance between continents, say the distance between Europe and North America or Europe and Asia, it's actually shorter if you're crossing over the Arctic than if you're trying to go through other existing subsea cable routes. And the reason that's important is because if the cable is shorter, you're actually going to be able to send information with less of a delay. And, you know, it's a small delay. These cables are super fast, but for industries where even a tiny millisecond worth of delay is important, say for financial trading, they have a huge interest in getting information there as quickly as they possibly can.
So, Isabel, how far are we from this happening? Do you think it's likely in the coming years?
You know, it's hard to say. This is a first of its kind project, and they need customers to sign on. They need investors. And there's some hesitation from companies that would come in and do that just because it is kind of a crazy first of its kind project. It's hard to do market research and predict demand for a route that doesn't exist yet and has never existed. So I think, you know, looking forward 10 years or so, I think it's likely that this will happen. It's just not clear how soon it will happen.
Wall Street Journal reporter Isabel Bousquet. Isabel, thank you for your insight on this.
Thank you so much for having me.